We are at a moment of extraordinary peril. The fact that the doomsday clock was moved 10 seconds closer to midnight is a mark of our peril, because that clock is managed by world experts who are sound judges of where we stand. And we are at the brink of a disaster. The disaster is because our global politics is failing miserably, first and foremost with the United States, which is a major provocateur of this war and a major threat to the peace, to be blunt. We need a different foreign policy in the United States. Of course, we need a different foreign policy in Russia and Ukraine and of the major powers. And this has to be a foreign policy to get us off this reckless war between Russia and NATO, which is escalating by the day, because the doomsday clock moved 10 seconds closer to midnight at the same time that the United States and Germany agreed to send new highly advanced tanks to Ukraine in a guaranteed reckless escalation that brings us closer to nuclear war. And the belligerents in this, which start with Russia and the United States, are not even talking right now with each other, which is an absolute disgrace. It's worse than five-year-old children. The idea that you don't even have a discussion between President Biden and President Putin for more than a year, just public posturing, reckless statements about each other without even a phone call. It's worse than five-year-olds. And I give a huge amount of responsibility for this horrible situation to the US government over many years. The reason is this conflict goes back actually more than 30 years to 1990, when President Gorbachev, who I had the honor to help support as an economic advisor to his economic team, unilaterally disbanded the Warsaw Pact military alliance of the Soviet Union. Unilaterally. And when he did it, he received solemn assurances by Germany and the United States that NATO would not fill the vacuum with US-led military bases and alliances. And the United States lied. Not for the first time, by the way, because as soon as the military alliance of the Soviet Union was disbanded, the neoconservatives in the United States, that is the military industrial complex and its supporters, began to plot the eastward movement of NATO. And this started already in 1992. And then in the mid-1990s, after President Clinton had told further lies to President Yeltsin, who I also had the honor to help advise, NATO began its enlargement. First to three Central European countries, Poland, Hungary, and Czechoslovakia, which became Czech Republic, and Slovakia. And from then on, the United States has been pursuing its unipolar agenda of moving American bases, weaponry, missile systems, ABM systems further eastward, with the idea in part of surrounding Russia. And this was laid out by Zbigniew Brzezinski in 1997 in his book, The Global Chessboard, where he talked about the geographical pivots especially the role of Ukraine, as absolutely central stakes in the battle for hegemony between the US and Russia. In 2004, NATO expanded to 7 more countries, including the Baltic states, Romania, Bulgaria, Slovenia, and Slovakia. And then in 2008, George Bush Jr. insisted that NATO would move to Ukraine and to Georgia. And President Putin at the time and in the year before had made absolutely clear that is the ultimate red line for us. And it was in this context also we should recall that the United States had unilaterally abandoned the ABM treaty and started placing missiles in Eastern Europe. And so in 2008, President Putin already told Bush that this was leading to conflict and that Russia would take Crimea if the US persisted in its move. Then please understand that in 2010, 11, 12, 13, Ukraine tried to walk a delicate balancing act between the United States pressures and Russia. President Yanukovych called for neutrality, which is what he understood rightly to be necessary to save Ukraine from the disaster that it's in right now. The United States could not abide by neutrality. And so the United States contributed to the violent overthrow of Yanukovych in February 2014. We say it's the Maidan Revolution, a spontaneous uprising, but the United States at the most senior levels was involved in that, quote, spontaneous uprising, including the then Assistant Secretary of State, Victoria Nuland, who is now the Undersecretary of State for Political Affairs, and who has been involved in manipulating Ukraine's politics for a decade. She is the inside neocon in the State Department. So this war started, by the way, February 2014. Not February 2022. It's a lie that it started February 2022. It started with the overthrow of a government trying to maintain neutrality. And the United States helped put in power extreme nationalists in Ukraine who broke the neutrality policy, demanded NATO membership as soon as possible, and welcomed billions of dollars of arms shipments from the United States starting in 2014. So this war, going into its 9th year, came from a direct collision between two nuclear superpowers. How stupid is this? I can't even use polite language, because the people in the United States government that have provoked this, these neoconservatives who have been in power for more than 30 years, are putting the entire world in danger. And of course, the media is completely dominated by the US and UK, English language media, I should say, and it tells one story, the bravado US-led narrative. It doesn't tell any of the facts, gives none of the background. And by the way, the United States learned its tricks from Britain, which has certainly been the most violent country in history over the last 2.5 centuries, fighting in almost every place in the world. Now Britain can't manage anything. It can't even keep its clinics open anymore, but it still loves war, as long as it's someone else's war. So Britain is the great propagandist of this war. And the English media tell the story, Putin invaded, no reason, no provocation, February 2022. It's all Russia's evil without any background at all. And without the most basic point, which is that this was completely avoidable and preventable. If the United States neoconservatives had not been pushing a dangerous agenda for 30 years and putting all of us in peril, it's disgusting. But what's disgusting, by the way, is that they are not even grown up enough to get on a phone call together to say, how do we avoid disaster? This to me is inexcusable. Even five-year-olds talk with each other after they have the fight in the playground. But there's no talk, it's just hate language every day. And we hear the hate language coming from Ukraine's government, we hear the hate language coming from the UK especially, they're the masters of this kind of Russophobia. We hear the hate language in the United States, and we have no negotiations going on right now. And then we hear the Secretary General of NATO as if he's just quoting George Orwell, but he means it seriously. He say, weapons are peace. No, Mr. Stoltenberg, weapons are not peace. Negotiations are peace. Shame on you for saying that weapons are peace. We're grown-ups. Talk like grown-ups. We want to stay alive. We don't want a nuclear war. We don't trust you. Because if you want trust, then talk to the other side. Understand politics. Understand, like Clausewitz knew two centuries ago, war is a continuation of politics with other means. It means that politics in the normal sense was not pursued properly. So that politics now is by killing people and destroying Ukraine. Politics is to separate the two superpowers, to stop the neoconservative illusion of a unipolar US world. We don't want a hegemon, whether it's the US or any other country. We want a multipolar world. We don't want a world of military alliances that's going to get us into World War III the same way that it got us into World War I, and we've never gotten out of that. Stop these divisions of the world between our side and your side and talk with each other, and especially keep the military powers away from each other. Because the President of the United States should be the first to say NATO will not enlarge to Ukraine. We don't want these two superpowers accidentally or deliberately entering into complete Armageddon. Think of the United States, how it would be if Russia made military bases in Mexico. We'd say, oh, sure, no problem. That's Mexico's right. Hardly. We'd invade the next day. But the neocons don't have principles. They just have the idea of power. So, well, Russia's not going to do it. We're going to do it. But this is what is bringing us 90 seconds to midnight, for God's sake. So what do we need to do? We need for negotiations to start immediately. I don't know where most of Europe's leaders are. They just have their head completely in the sand, or the US tells them what to do. There are a few that have spoken clearly and publicly, but then the US beats them down. But President Macron has said repeatedly, stop this provocation because we need to respect the security interests of Russia as well as Ukraine. Prime Minister Orban of Hungary has been very clear on this point. But most of the European leaders just follow the US line. And so we don't hear from Europe, and Brussels even more so. It's just a war party. There's no diplomacy anymore. But for the rest of the world, and there are people all over the world listening in, please have your governments call for negotiations immediately. And the negotiations are not between Ukraine and Russia. This is a war between the United States and Russia. It's being fought by Ukrainians who are trapped in the middle of this disaster by leaders who somehow were told by the United States, oh, be with us, we'll keep you safe, just like the U.S. kept the Vietnamese safe, just like the U.S. kept the Afghanis safe. Come on. This is time for honesty and being grown up. Ukraine is not being helped at all by this. This is Ukraine's being destroyed by this proxy war. But have your governments call for immediate negotiations between the United States and Russia to stop a war that is endangering the entire planet. And it's obvious the first term of an agreement is Russia goes home and the United States stops NATO enlargement. This is the basis of peace, that there is Ukraine is neutral and both sides of these, both these nuclear superpowers back off. Neither fills the vacuum of the other. Of course, there are specific issues inside that need now to be settled. We once had the Minsk II agreements, and they were aimed at settling peacefully the conflict in the Donbas. But we even heard from former Chancellor Merkel, oh, we didn't really mean that. We weren't really going to guarantee that. That was bad faith. That was to give Ukraine time to arm. She actually said that a couple of weeks ago. We had agreement for peace, but was it a fake by the US and Ukraine and Germany to rearm? Or was it real? We need something real this time, not something fake. And similarly with Crimea, what Yanukovych was proposing was a long-term lease arrangement for Russia and Ukraine in Crimea, because after all, Russia's had its naval fleet in Sevastopol since 1783. And then every day now, Zelensky says, oh, we're going to chase them out of Crimea. Yeah, over all of our dead bodies. Let's stop this nonsense, this childishness. The whole world's survival is at stake. And this rhetoric is so reckless of these leaders, these so-called leaders, these politicians, who think that they, with bravado, that they can say anything, but what they're doing is driving us closer to nuclear war. So we need compromises like the Minsk agreement, like a long-term arrangement for Crimea, and especially for the two nuclear superpowers to back off and stop this reckless NATO enlargement, which was a lie from the beginning, a violation of agreements made to President Gorbachev all the way back in 1990, and hopelessly provocative and dangerous. And that is the key to getting a world back to some protection and some hope for survival. So thank you very much. We need your voices everywhere in every country for governments to stand up clearly at the United Nations and in every other forum to say, stop this war now, stop the escalation, stop the bravado, stop the hate talk, and sit down and negotiate a peace that respects the security interests of all of the parties and stop the military expansion. This is the root of this war. Thank you very much.
Jeffrey, thank you so much for these highly interesting, but also reminding us of our responsibilities. And I can only say for IPB, with our ceasefire campaign over Christmas, calling for ceasefire, I think we help to bring the question of negotiation and ceasefires much more higher on the agenda of many organizations which were working for peace, international organizations, trade unions, and others. And we will continue with this. We have in mind to have a big negotiation peace conference in Vienna in May, June, to support your ideas and thoughts. But let me ask you two questions. First question is, what do you think is the role of the Europeans, European Union, but also of the other European countries? And the second question, who are the forces which can internationally or worldwide, which are the governments worldwide, which can help bringing these war-oriented governments to a negotiation table? Are there international governments? Is this India? Is this China? Are we speaking about Turkey? Maybe you can describe a little bit how we can change the forces in the direction of negotiation and ceasefire.
Thank you very much. Let me start with the second question. Most of the world, and I should be more clear, most of the world's governments clearly want peace and are neutral in this conflict between the US and Russia. It's when this war, war of 2022, exploded in February last year. The US and Europe said, okay, the whole world's aligned against Russian aggression. Well, actually, it wasn't like that. The vast majority of the world's government said, stop the fighting. We don't take sides. We don't join your sanctions. We don't view this as a one-sided affair. China, for example, very responsibly said, negotiate, but respect the security interests of all sides. What that meant was the NATO question. And around the world, most governments did not impose sanctions on Russia. They said, we want an end to the war. We are neither Russia haters nor Ukraine haters. We want the two sides to negotiate. So practically speaking, China, Brazil, India, South Africa, the so-called BRICS countries, together with Russia, those countries are major voices for peace and negotiation, and they should continue to say very clearly that their vision is not to side with one side or the other side, but to side with negotiation and peace. And India has a special role to play. Not only is it a great country and a civilization and 1.4 billion people, but it's the presidency of the G20 this year. And so India has plenty of opportunity to push hard for peace and negotiations. Brazil will host the G20 next year. President Lula is very clear that what is needed right now is not military victory on the battlefield. This is a reckless illusion. What is needed is negotiations and an end to the NATO enlargement. And Brazil will be president of the G20 next year. South Africa, which has said the same, will be president of the G20 in 2025. So I believe that these countries have a huge role to play. I think the African Union should make a strong statement that Africa is being endangered by this war. Africa views this war as a tragedy and an unnecessary one, and as a solvable one as well. So the African Union, I believe, should stand up and be clear. This is the time for peace and for negotiations. Turkey, in my mind, gets a special commendation because President Erdogan has worked very hard during the past year, and his very skillful foreign ministry has worked hard to try to mediate between the two sides. It's not easy to do, but of course, Turkey knows the Black Sea area very well indeed, and should be able to play a very important role. But I would say there's not a government in the world that can't contribute to the momentum of demand for negotiations by saying to the big powers, we do not agree with the approach of winning on the battlefield, because that endangers the whole world. Of course, first and foremost, Ukraine, but actually the entire world with nuclear war. And we demand, therefore, a negotiation now. How can they even think to send tanks right now without even mentioning the word negotiations? Shame on them, shame.
Thank you so much, Jeffrey. And I have three questions from our participants. I will start with a question from my colleague and friend from Ukraine. And he asked, and I will read it shortly to you, the main point. My question is, as economists, can you suggest a way how to deal with structural problems? Militarization of all economies and politics, military-industrial complex, which consumed and corrupted our democracies. I will not continue. I think you understand the question. The second question is to the role of the Vatican peace plans. Are there any following up of these important gathering in June? And what is this? What is happening with the peace plan now? Are these ideas for a second conference and an end? And the third one is, they were writing a letter to the Mexican government. What do you think about the Mexican peace plan, the ideas of the Mexican foreign ministry presented to the United Nations in the name of the president of Mexico? So what do you think about the role of Mexico?
Thank you very much. On the first question, this is definitely in part the corruption of our political processes. I can speak about the United States. The U.S. is a government for hire. Our political system is organized around campaign contributions, where lobbyists and major campaign contributors spend billions of dollars, and by doing so, essentially by the policies of the U.S. government. And I have no doubt that the big campaign contributors have played a role in this war. And because what I can tell you is, this is not a war that is popular among the U.S. public, or these neocon ideas are not popular or not demanded by the public, even with all the propaganda we receive from the U.S. government. The public is very skeptical. This is a policy in the U.S. driven by a small group of people that have the hands on levers of power. And so it is not democracy that has brought us to war. It is the corruption of our political institutions. I couldn't agree more. I think that is why our voices are so important, especially with the mainstream media unwilling, unable, I don't understand it, but absolutely not doing their job of holding government to account, but just the opposite, just becoming megaphones for government propaganda. The New York Times, the Washington Post, useless. All they do is report what senior officials say, even unnamed senior officials, as if these newspapers forgot what their role is in a democracy, which is to doubt the government, to probe, to investigate. They don't even do that anymore. It's pathetic. And so this is a very important reason for this call and for the peace movement to call out this small group that manipulates our governments and that in the end creates threats to all of humanity. On the Vatican plan, we had a, or not plan, I should say, but the meeting, we had a very, very good meeting. I can tell you, the United States government and government of Ukraine and others were very unhappy in general about any calls for negotiations. This is incredible to me. They have a way of, we've gone a whole year without any negotiations. Shock, and especially, we went a whole year without Biden speaking with Putin once. So this is what makes this difficult. Then governments, I mean, these governments, these belligerents in the hands of these neocons don't want to talk, and they try to beat down anything we say, and the media beat down the mainstream media beat down the message, though the message is getting through more and more because it's the official narratives are so phony and so much propaganda that more and more channels are finding ways to see the truth. And I think that that's an important development. So I'm trying to think of every way to amplify what we're saying and doing, and I'm open to all suggestions. We need public meetings, we need online meetings, we need leaders that are ready to go against the official narratives to be speaking out. There have been a number of generals in Germany recently who have said how reckless all of this is and how phony it is and how dangerous it is for Ukraine. And that's very important to hear more of those voices. The government of Mexico, I know, has been pursuing the idea of peace commission and high-level peace. And I think being very practical right now not only peace in principle or in general, but peace in Ukraine would be very helpful and timely. And if AMLO, the president of Mexico, and President Lula, for example, within the Americas work together, there are many other like-minded leaders in the Americas. And the Americas, the countries of Latin America, could speak out very, very clearly. It would put the US, it would force the US to listen. This is important. The neocons get away with it if they dominate the narrative. But if other governments are saying, no, no, that is dangerous, that's wrong, then they can't dominate the narrative. And so this is why it's so important for governments like Mexico, which is also a member of the G20, to speak out clearly, and for like-minded countries that are not, and let me put it this way, not part of the US alliance, and that means that outside of NATO, outside of the US military alliance in Asia, the rest of the world, that's the vast majority of countries, those countries have to say, we are on neither side, we are for peace, and to be very clear about that.